Call the Senate Finance Committee to order. Today's February the 19th, a couple of minutes after 9 a.m. We're in the Senate Finance Room, the state capitol. Today, present are Chairman Stedman and Olson, Senator Keel, Senator Merrick, Senator Kaufman, Senator Cronk, and myself, Senator Hoffman. We have a full contingent of finance members. Today's agenda, we have three items on today's agenda. Amendments from the Office of Management and Budget. The second item is response to committee questions from OMB. And the third is response to committee questions from DOT. Just for the members, we do have a 10:30 meeting, so we have about an hour and a half. If we're not able to go through all the items, we will recess until 1:30, so members should be aware that these items are important, and members should not hold back from their questions. We need to get the questions answered. With that, we will go to the first item on today's agenda, which is a presentation on the amendments from the Office of Management and Budget, and invite Lacey Sanders, the Director of the Office of Management and Budget, to the table. Please introduce yourself and go over the information.
Great.
Ms. Sanders.
Good morning, members of the Senate Finance Committee. For the record, my name is Lacey Sanders. I am the Director of the Office of Management and Budget for the Governor. And today I am going to start with a presentation on the FY27 Governor's Amended Budget. As you all may be aware, on the 30th day of the legislative session, amendments are due to the bodies. The Governor's Office of Management and Budget transmitted those amendments on February 18th. And today we're going to walk through those. I will note there were a few supplemental items that were also included for fiscal year 2026, and we'll walk through those as well. So we'll get started. To start on slide two, we have our fiscal year 2027 updated short fiscal summary. Again, this is something we'll continue to update throughout legislative session, and it incorporates both the fiscal year 2026 and fiscal year 2027 amendments that were transmitted to the governor, or excuse me, to the legislature. What I will do today is, instead of walking through each line, because we'll have more details on the following slide, I'll bring you down to the resulting surplus deficit that has been updated to reflect these changes. The overall deficit for fiscal year 2026 is approximately $467 million. And the overall surplus deficit that's proposed to be drawn from the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund for fiscal year 2027 is $1.63 billion. And again, the following slides, I'll provide more detail on what has been added through this amendment process. So starting with the operating fiscal year 27 governor's amendments, this slide number three provides just a high-level snapshot by department of the changes that were proposed. And I'm going to walk in the next slide through each several of the larger items for the committee, just to talk through the details. But as you'll see, the amendments total $93 million in unrestricted general funds and a total of $749 million in total funds, with the majority of this being related to Medicaid adjustments, as well as bringing in the Rural Health Transformation Fund appropriation of $272 million for the second award or the second year of that award. So that's the primary increase that you'll see for the amendments under the federal column. And again, I'll walk through details on the next slide. So many of these amendments that we're going to talk about today are not new items. We talked about them last week, 2 weeks ago, when I presented to the committee on the FY 2026 supplemental. So the majority of these items have a corresponding supplemental, and that cost to doing business continues into the next fiscal year. And so we're reflecting that in 2027 so that we don't have a hole in the following fiscal year. So starting with the Department of Corrections on slide four, we have $20 million to support personal services needs for corrections. This is due to the increased need for meeting overtime needs as well as operational costs associated with the Department of Corrections. You'll note, as I just mentioned, there is an increase of $20 million in the supplemental budget, and we do continue that cost into fiscal year 2027. These are costs that we're experiencing already. And project that we will continue to need the $20 million through the rest of the next fiscal year as well. Additionally, and it's not noted on this slide, I apologize, but the $3.1 million to support personal services and inmate health care is also a supplemental need that we put forward. It's just a slightly different number. This number would cover the full year of fiscal year 2027's projected need. This is primarily due to moving the inmate health care staff to a 24-hour rotation so that there are services to support our inmates and the institutional facilities all hours of the day. Moving down to the Department of Health, as I noted, the first item, the first bullet is $272 million of the Federal Receipt Authority for the Rural Health Transformation Project. This is the second tranche of funding that would be received and would cover fiscal years 2027 through 2029. Again, like we talked about with the supplemental, we're taking a stair-stepped approach with multi-year appropriations. They cover a three-year time period. So the fiscal year supplemental item for 2026 through 2028 was $272 million, and then we move forward into the following fiscal year with an identical amount of $272.2 million covering the next 3 years, and we'll continue that moving into the future.
And the total for the 5 years is $1.4
billion? Chair Hoffman, yeah. The second bullet on this slide is actually a new item. This wasn't covered in the fiscal year 2026 supplementals, so it's just under $8 million for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP program. This is the administrative cost shift due to the changes at the federal level requiring the split or the percentage breakdown be adjusted to a higher proportion to the state of Alaska. The third bullet for the Department of Health is a continuation as well as the costs that we're seeing associated with the public assistance eligibility systems. So as you may recall, in past years, the Division of Public Assistance relied upon multi-year appropriations that were one-time in nature. Those appropriations have gone away, and so now we have a cost to the state that we need to continue with those eligibility systems to ensure that our constituents receive the benefits that they're eligible for. Item number four, I should number these on the slide, $8 million. This is a split between state general funds and federal funds for the Public Assistance Virtual Contact Center. Again, this has a corresponding supplemental from fiscal year 2026. This is a contract that the Division of Public Assistance has to essentially a call center to assist constituents across the state in ensuring that we have the information that's necessary to receive their benefits or to address questions pertaining to eligibility. And then lastly, as I noted on the earlier slide, the Department of Health's team submitted a revised Medicaid projection to the legislature that was due on February 15th, I believe, or around that time. And so with that updated Medicaid projection, we've brought forward the revised numbers associated with utilization for Medicaid. This totals $43 million of state funding under that formula, as well as the expected $334 million in federal receipts. And again, this is something that we have a corresponding supplemental for. You'll see a slight reduction in the supplemental package that we submitted due to those numbers being revised, and we'll talk about that on a future slide. Under the Department of Public Safety, we have one new item that does have a corresponding supplemental. This is for the Department of Public Safety's Village Public Safety Officer, or VPSO, program. On a positive note, the department is experiencing a significant increase in retention time associated with people in the positions of the VPSO positions. What that means is, however, that costs are increasing associated with those positions being retained longer. And so the $1.65 million provides the ability for the Department of Public Safety to fill seven VPSO positions that have been retained vacant due to the lack of funding available to fill those positions. There are other costs associated with filling those positions as well, and we're also seeing trends of increased costs associated with supplies and equipment and travel related to the VPSO program.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Sanders, thanks for being here this morning. A couple of questions on this slide. When last we talked about corrections, we looked at a supplemental that was comparable to this 5% increase in their UGF. And since then, we've talked with the commissioner, who said one of the problems that's leading to this tremendous growth in personal services is you can't get staffed up. We talked to the commissioner of administration, who said we're paying totally competitive rates for our correctional officers. Can you outline for us what tools the administration is giving corrections to get staffed up? Are there hiring bonuses? Are there retention bonuses? Are there take-home cars? I mean, anything?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, I don't have a list off the top of my head. I would need to go back to my notes associated with what LOAs are on the books, letters of agreements, are on the books for the Department of Corrections. There are some. I can't recall them off of the top of my head. What I would say is, you know, we've seen a fluctuation in hiring at the Department of Corrections. We started to see an upward trend in being able to fill positions, and now we're back down, seeing that downward trend again, as Commissioner Winkleman expressed. I think when we talk with the Department of Administration and the Department of Corrections, there are more factors that we need to consider in the administration associated with what can be done. As I imagine, I have not worked in the Department of Corrections, but it is probably a very difficult place to work and a difficult work environment. So are there things that we can do to change that? For example, I know Commissioner Winkleman put forward a unit to help with mental health needs within that correctional officers experience. So starting to branch out beyond just pay and what other resources or tools in our toolbox can we use to support the correctional officers that we employ. One thing I will note that is not part of this package today, but will be in a future package, is we did finish the interest arbitration associated with the correctional officers. Since that interest arbitration is complete, we will have salary adjustments that are brought forward to the committee for consideration. They just were not prepared in time to present to the committee today.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It'd be good to get that list. I look at 23 million, and there's about 1,000 COs. It's a pretty substantial number per correctional officer just in this year's increase. I would think the toolbox could be pretty robust to try and control that cost growth, since that's cost growth on top of the cost growth in the December 15 proposal.
Through the chair, Senator Keel, one thing I'll point out of this $20 million, approximately $13 million of it was related to the reductions that were taken in the budget last year. So we had a $6.8 million reduction in personal services that was for a previous LOA that was never funded with actual funding in the budget. It was utilizing vacancies. As well as another reduction of $7.5 million for the Spring Creek wing, one of the three wings at Spring Creek. So part of what we're seeing here in this $20 million is bringing back up the level of funding in the Department of Corrections to something that's sustainable to move forward with operations.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate that. I think from the prior fiscal year to the one we're in now, there was still about a 4.5% UGF growth, even with those attempts. So, on another topic, if I may, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Keel.
Thank you, Director Sanders. In the public assistance, the eligibility system upgrades. Pretty substantial increase in costs showing there for the next fiscal year. Can you talk to us about what is causing the increases and what the timeline is to get that project up and running fully operational?
Yes. Through the chair, Senator Keel, I believe I have Director or Assistant Commissioner Pam Halloran here today. I can speak very broadly, but I bet she has a more detailed answer for you.
Please identify yourself. You understand the question.
Yes. Good morning. For the record, Pam Halloran, Assistant Commissioner for the Department of Health. The eligibility systems for the Division of Public Assistance, multiple parts of that question. So I'll start with where we are. We have three milestone documents that we would love to send to the committee in regard to where we are and the status of our system improvements. We have one that shows the systems that are completed. The second shows the systems that will be completed in the next 6 months, and then the third one will show on the way out. So we're close. We're working to integrate all the systems so that they talk to each other and just make things better for our workers to be able to not have to toggle between systems and have it be integrated so that we can move eligibility applications faster. So as far as this increment, what we realized was that we have relied on a multi-year appropriation up until the end of FY25 to pay these costs. And so when that created a cliff for us, and so what we've done is we have opened our books and we've looked at the cost of these eligibility systems from in 2023 to the current FY26 cost. And there's been a significant increase that, again, has been covered by multi-year appropriations that are now gone. These systems are for all of our programs, so they're Medicaid and they're SNAP and the many, many other public assistance programs that the division administers. These systems provide every single workflow related. So they receive the applications either online via a portal or hand-entered when somebody calls. They go all the way through the system. They manage the workflow for the workers all the way to issuing the benefit payments.
Senator Keel.
Thank you. The next part of the question was, when's our expected completion date for this modernization?
Senator Keel, I'd love to show you those milestone documents. I would hate to commit to a date on the record. That might not be accurate.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. And just to be clear, right, the old system, I think there's seven of them or eight of them, and they were obsolete a decade ago at least, probably more than that. So there's no question this is a needed project. Mm-hmm. Can you give us sort of a rough ballpark of when some of these development rollout testing costs that seem to be included in this prior multi-year and now I'm losing the line, but they might roll down and we might start to see the efficiencies we're looking for. But just you know, spitballing. Is it a year out? Is it 5 years out? Is it going to be 25 more years at 21 million?
Senator Keel, the document that I have to share with you, which can show what's to be completed in the next 6 months and what's going to be completed out, we have a number of capital appropriations, as you're aware. We're working off of four different capital appropriations to complete this system modernization. Most of those capital appropriations term at the end of FY27. We'll probably be seeking an extension for some of them. Some systems are already online. We already have a portal that folks can get to get into our systems and apply online and talk to our systems. But as far as the capital appropriations, probably not by the end of 27. I don't want to commit to an amount I can't say it's going to be later than a couple of years, but I don't want to commit on the record to the full. Well, we will share those documents with you.
Thank you, Senator Keel. Do you have a follow-up?
I'd have one more on this slide.
Senator Keel.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the long lead. The other one that is on this slide is this so-called virtual call center, which has been pretty problematic. And if memory serves, the legislature, when we left last year in May, gave the department intent language to get off of it. And here, instead, what we're seeing is increased costs, supplemental and then next fiscal year. And without reciting everything that the subcommittee's looked into, it has not been a winner. It has not been efficient. It has not been cost effective. Why are we seeing increased costs for it here and continuing this despite the legislature's intent language and the appropriation?
Senator Keel, through the chair, the virtual call center, you are correct. It did not make the enrolled budget at the for FY26. The contract, it was essentially not operationally feasible to end the contract. It would have put the department out of compliance with state statute and federal regulation. It would have created a situation where the 24,000 Alaskans that are served every month and the 241,000 Alaskans, the benefits would be significantly delayed as far as getting to, we would have had a situation where eligibility technicians would have been answering the phone as opposed to doing true eligibility work. It was a compliance issue. It would have penalties, whether it be SNAP penalties, which we're very aware of, as well as other audit findings. Those costs might have been far more significant for the department we would have fallen out of compliance.
Senator Keel.
Thank you. I think, Mr. Chairman, we've got some penalties for this, too. If memory serves, I heard about a $4.3 million grievance award for this violating one of the labor contracts. So is this a phase down or a ramp down, or is this appropriation going to get us off of this thing?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, I'm so glad you asked that question. It is not a long-term solution. It is to get us through the initial backlog. We want to be out of this contract as much as the legislature wants us out of this contract and as much as the unions want us out of this contract. Right now we're on track to keep the contract through FY27 and evaluate. We already are the 15 positions that the legislature allocated for FY26, we're already integrating them into the work that the virtual contact center does, and that's our phased approach to slowly get out from under the contract. We realize and we consider it very temporary.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Keel. Ms. Sanders, please continue.
Thank you. Okay. Chair Huffman, if there are no further questions on slide 4, I'll move forward to the capital amendments under the fiscal year 2027. Again, slide 5 highlights by agency, the request that will be that we'll walk through in detail on the following slide. Total fiscal year 2027 amendments totaled $10.4 million in unrestricted general funds. Of that, $8 million is tied to what we refer to as the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation's dividend. It's classified as unrestricted general fund, but it's utilizing a portion of the dividend. And a total of $22.5 million of all funding sources. So moving on to slide number six, I will walk through the amendments. The first item is within the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. This is an increase of $7.6 million for Armory's deferred maintenance replacement and renewal funding that's coming from the feds or the Department of Defense. Within the Department of Natural Resources, we have a $4.5 million permitting modernization and reform project. This is in the Division of Mining, Land, and Water as they have been working under the administrative order to improve permitting in their division. The Department of Natural Resources has really stepped up in their ability to find and identify ways to improve their permitting processes, and this is one of those projects that we'd like to highlight as moving forward under the administrative order. Within the Department of Public Safety, we have two items that were included in the fiscal year 2026 budget but were removed. The first is $375,000 of unrestricted general funds for state troopers' ballistic protection equipment. So it is my understanding that the equipment that the troopers use has an expiration date associated with it. So this will provide them with the funding and resources to replace that expiring equipment that they utilize. And also, we have a $2 million increase for aircraft critical engine replacement and safety upgrades. This is another item that was removed from the budget last year. It's $2 million for critical upgrades. They have a routine maintenance schedule for their aircraft, and without an appropriation in 2026, they are falling behind and want to ensure life, health, safety for the troopers and personnel that they transport. And lastly, we have a new item within the Department of Revenue. This is $8 million. Again, I mentioned it is coming from specifically the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation's dividend. This is a statewide housing development and access project. You may be familiar with this. It was in an earlier appropriation bill several years ago. It is a project that is intended to work with communities on developing rural areas for housing development. So this may include things like, putting in a road or putting in utilities and access to the road. The Department of Housing Finance, HFC, the Housing Finance Corporation, has done an excellent job with the former appropriation that they received, and so this is continuing that into the future and finding access opportunities across the state.
Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think this is a really good idea the governor has. It also takes those properties that are off the tax rolls, puts them on the tax rolls, so rather than raising everybody's property tax, they can actually expand the tax base for additional revenue. So I think it's a good idea that the governor's continuing this endeavor.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll echo that. At DNR, the land folks have been doing a remarkable job working through a backlog. And somebody ought to applaud them in public. It's been impressive. On this request, could we get, unless you happen to have it on the tip of your brain, could we get a breakout of, we're seeing these system upgrades and computerization programs funded with capital. A piece of that pays for the upfront. A piece of that starts the licensing and operations. We just discussed it in health. Could we get the clearest breakout possible of what's upfront cost and what's going to be ongoing, just so that we have a sense of that and we can look back as this thing gets up and running?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, you mean for specific to DNRs, not statewide, correct?
Mr. Chairman, specifically asking for this one, although it would be a great practice for all of them in the future. Yes, please.
Through the chair, Senator Keel, yes, we can. I believe it's included in the backup, but we'll make sure that the committee has access to that information. Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Keel.
And then just one more on the slide.
Yes, Senator Keel.
For the trooper equipment, last year, I believe the capital budget co-chair put $500,000 for this type of equipment in, and I don't think it survived to the end. So this year, having missed 1 year, it's a request for $375,000. We probably ought to just put this in the operating budget base. But my concern is if we didn't do the $500,000 last year, we're only asking for $375,000 this year. What's going on with the troopers' equipment, and are we doing what we need to do?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, I'm just going to remark on one correction. It was $750,000 that was included last year, and it was an item that was vetoed due to the funding source that was associated with it. But there was a second part to this project, which was the less lethal equipment. And so the ballistics protection equipment is something that the administration is prioritizing. And my understanding is they have a rotation that they will go through to replace that equipment. We want to make sure that they're able to replace that equipment. $375,000 isn't going to be spent all on day one. They will go through a process of replacing equipment over time. As we've talked about in this committee, there are always more needs than we can address. And so this ballistics protection equipment was prioritized as something that we would bring back before the legislature.
Can you remind the committee what the funding source was?
Chair Hoffman, yes. It was the ADA reserves was the funding source that was utilized.
Senator Keel, are you finished? Senator Stedman?
I'd like to just make a note, Mr. Chairman. I think there's several items in the budget that were reduced by this committee through the budget process, several items that were vetoed by the administration. And then as we fast forward into today's environment, we see a lot of those items were being added back because they're needed to be funded. And it just goes to the point I'd like to make, Mr. Chairman, that for those that think there's massive areas within this budget to be reduced, it's a little challenging because we've tried it, both the administration and the legislature, and we got to be careful because they come getting added back in a supplemental because the governor needs those funds to operate the state. I just thought I'd make that point. Unfortunately, all our reductions didn't stick and all his reductions didn't stick.
So there's blame to go all around. We did not fund things adequately that are being requested, and the governor vetoed items that are being requested. So we're basically truing up the operating budget and the capital budget. Ms. Sanders.
As I noted earlier, this amendment packet did include a few supplemental items. What I'll share is the original deadline for supplementals was on the 15th day of legislative session. Amendments are due the 30th day of legislative session. Past practice has been that the legislature allows the administration to continue to bring forward items throughout the legislative process so that we can make sure that we are addressing everything that needs to be addressed. We appreciate that. Today we all have a few items adding to the supplemental request. It's a total of $41 million. You will see a few negative supplementals as we've trued up items from the prior year as the year proceeds forward. The overall reduction is $17 million in all funds, but $41.7 million in state general funds. And I will talk about those on the following slide, on slide 8. The highlights include, as I noted earlier, we had the Department of Health complete their updated projections for the Medicaid budget. So that resulted in about a $2 million reduction in general funds and a $59 million reduction in federal receipt authority. I noted earlier, under the Department of Public Safety, we are seeing in the current year shortfalls for the department to be able to fill those remaining vacant VPSO positions. You may have heard from Commissioner Cockrell many times. He has a goal to see all of those positions filled and continue to grow that program. This doesn't grow the program. This just fills the remaining positions that are currently being held vacant due to budgetary needs. Under the Department of, it's not a department, under debt service, we have a reduction of $1.3 million associated with the department refunding bonds. They have done an excellent job in finding opportunities to refund and reissue bonds, resulting in savings to the state over the long term. And then lastly, under the fund capitalizations, we have a $43.7 million unrestricted general fund deposit to the fire suppression fund. I'd like to comment a little bit further on this one first before we proceed, if it's okay. During the interim, there were two memos or letters from the governor declaring fire disasters. Those totaled $55 million. That would provide $55 million for the Department of Natural Resources and the Forestry Division to continue to respond to fires that were actively occurring, as well as address prior year fire costs. This capitalization adds $43 million on top of the $55 million, bringing our overall supplemental for fire to $98 million. And one thing I'd like to clarify, and we do have experts online and in the room to help with that as well, is that this isn't associated with 1 year's fire. We have many cooperative agreements with numerous entities across the nation to assist in fires. And as those entities allocate the cost associated with a fire, we receive billings for those that we need to pay the bills. So a part of this $98 million for fire fund is old year fires that we are catching up on and ensuring that our bills are paid and our commitments are made. It seems like a really large number this year. My understanding is that we are caught up to 23 into 24. And so the department will continue to work with their organizations to ensure that we're caught up and making those payments to the commitments that we have. So I'm happy to take questions.
We do see this as a big increase. The interior of Alaska is the primary focus. The options are not good to let the fires burn. It doesn't seem as an option that the people of the interior would support. I'm sure Senator Cronk would not support that. So are there ways in staging, or has the department looked at ways that front end some capital expenditure so that we can reduce the ongoing operational costs of fire suppression?
Chair Hoffman, if it's okay, I'd like to bring Deputy Commissioner Goodrum or call on Norm McDonald. You want to answer it?
It's not as though this is an item that can be cut as far as I can see. So we as the legislature added funds last year into the not only the fire suppression area, but also for disaster relief. And we're seeing that this is coming back before us after the governor vetoed items. So did you hear my question?
I did. For the record, Deputy Commissioner Brent Goodrum, Chair Hoffman, yes, there's been a number of things that contribute to increased fire costs. This past season, we had 555 fires within Alaska on the landscape. When those occur near the road system and near communities, that demands a high level of response to protect the infrastructure and lives that are involved there. When we have to bring resources from out of state to state, that's a very costly proposition. And in calendar year 25, we brought over 3,500 resources to state to help us fight those fires. Not so long ago, and Senator Cronk will remember this, we used to have like close to 70 crews that were located throughout the state, often in remote parts of the state where fire was a real threat. And we had far greater access to those Alaskans who had knowledge of how to fight fire here in Alaska. We've lost that. And I just spoke with the Alaska Municipal League earlier this week and spoke about what we could do to help reinvigorate some of our training of rural communities when it comes to fire. Costs are, as we've seen post-COVID, have increased dramatically, particularly for aviation units. I think over the last 10 years, we've seen it increase by about 128% in our aviation costs. Logistics to get people here is very costly. What we need to do, I mean, we've worked closely with the administration, and we've set a goal to be at preparedness level 3. That means on a typical summer day that we have the folks we need to be able to respond to fires that are on the landscape. So we'd be happy to have further conversations about how we can solve this important issue here in Alaska, because fire won't go away.
Well, Senator Stedman's fire forests are not in jeopardy of starting fires, but the is there part of this increase due to changing in climate, or do we foresee this continuing in the future, or do you have any idea?
Chair Hoffman, two things. The last 20 years, we've seen almost a double in the amount of fire than we have seen in the preceding 20 years. And so we do see more fire on the landscape. We do know that we have a larger footprint also in the wildland-urban interface. As communities grow a little bit, we generally grow into those areas that are prone for fire. I think we're fifth in the nation for the number of properties that live within that wildland urban interface where fire is a real threat. And so, yes, we have things a little bit stacked against us, but we, working together, we can find solutions.
We see on the national scene, we've seen devastation of fires that consume whole communities. So it is something that is real. Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think your earlier point, the concern really isn't in the Tongass. We can't burn it if we had to. So soggy. But my understanding is there's a lot of beetle kill in the Kenai, and that has increased the forest fire opportunities, and maybe up in the Fairbanks area also. Could you maybe touch on that issue?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, yes, we do want to better steward our timber resources in the state. When you have dead, down, fallen trees, those are all fuels that can contribute to fire. Many years ago, when Senator Cronk was chairing our budget on the House side, he put forth a capital project that allowed the state to really invest in mitigation efforts, putting in fuel breaks. That's a really important investment that the state can make. I know the old Murphy Dome fire break around Fairbanks, originally put in around 2000, that we refreshed about a handful of years ago. We've used that numerous times since to protect homes, infrastructure, lives. the Funny River fire break that was put in place in 2013 protected over $1.7 billion worth of infrastructure when the Funny River fire occurred just that next year. And so by being proactive and working with communities to build fire resilient areas, that's an important investment that we can continue to make and provide areas for our wildland firefighters to take a defensive posture and protect values at risk.
Senator Stedman. Thank you, Senator Stedman. Senator Cronk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think just this one thing highlights, again, everybody at this table knows an investment today saves a lot of money down the road. And we all know that, but we have to figure out a way to how to invest back into our state so we are literally saving money in the future. And I know some of the issues, you know, like, you know, we don't have the resources, or we didn't buy a spotter plane that costs us a lot more money to go out and lease those kind of things. So it's all about finding the money and investing back into our state.
Thank you, Senator Cronk. Additional questions on fire suppression? Thank you. I would be remiss if I didn't address a concern on disaster relief, because we funded increases in FY26 budget for disaster and for fire. Do you feel that there is adequate funding for your initial request for disaster relief in the FY27 budget?
Chair Hoffman, I continue to have conversations with the Department of Military and Veteran Affairs. In fact, just yesterday was talking about this very item. We will continue to evaluate what we have in the 27 budget to determine if it's sufficient. One of the unknowns that we're still waiting for is that decision at the federal level related to the Halong West Coast storm, and whether it will be funded at that 25-75% or whether the appeal at the 90-10% will be accepted. I know that Director Brian Fisher is working very hard to advocate for that and express the needs associated with that. You know, at a broad level, if the disaster is $150 million and the state's portion is 25%, you're looking at close to $40 million. And this is based on very, very high-level estimates. Additionally, there are costs associated with the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities work throughout West Coast Alaska that's currently happening right now. So I don't want to commit to saying it is the number that should be moved forward with. I want to say we need to continue to evaluate it moving forward.
Well, there are two ways to go about the potential increase. One is to not appropriate and put contingency funds in the budget to address it if the decision is for a higher rate. And the other option is to wait till next year and address it in a supplemental. So we'll work with you to see what needs to be done. But I would lean toward putting contingency funds in to address it, so we don't have to. If it's needed, fine. If it's not needed, the money goes away, so we don't have to address it in a supplemental next year. Further comments on slide number 8?
One more.
Senator Cronk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I want to just highlight the having an investment into our timber management. Like we said, you know, we've created breaks around communities that really are important, and while we're harvesting that timber, and our state really hasn't invested into a timber management plan. In the interior, seeing that right now, we have the resources there, but we need the investment to help, you know, offset some of these wildfires. And we might as well be harvesting it and watching it burn and spending a lot more money just to fight them.
So. Thank you, Senator Cronk. Ms. Saunders?
Okay. Those were the prepared remarks today regarding the supplemental and amendments that were transmitted. I will note in every committee member's packets are extensive spreadsheets highlighting numerous items. Happy to walk through or follow up with questions if there are specific ones folks have. I was also asked today to walk through committee responses.
That's the next item on the agenda. Today, the second item OMB, you can address the responses at this time.
Okay, great. Thank you, Chair Hoffman. So I'm going to, there are two letters dated February 3rd. The first one that I am going to start with was our committee presentation on the governor's fiscal year 27 budget. In the first paragraph, it is noted that the date that the presentation was made on January 26, 2026, if folks are following along in their paper packets. The first question was specifically towards the department, of Law's work on the Quality of Life initiative that was mentioned by the governor in the State of the State. And this is, the question was related specifically to resource deployment, redeployment, or new costs expected to be incurred. The Department of Law provided a summary. I'm not going to read through it, but essentially we're utilizing existing resources and then the in partnership with the municipality of Anchorage, who has their own resources to address the work. So no new resources are being added for that item. Item number two, a continuation of our just previous conversation. There were, so this is in regards to timber receipts and, do you want to help me? Thank you. I was asked to pull it up on the screen. Sorry. The second question has to do with the, a capital budget request for timber receipts for a forest inventory initiative, and then whether there were any open items in the Tongass that need to be identified, such as roads that should be classified as roads. So the Department of Natural Resources provided an extensive response related to the Tongass National Forest. I'm not, again, not going to read through that response, but I'm happy to bring Deputy Commissioner Goodrum back up before the committee if the member has more extensive questions that are pertaining to this response.
Further questions on this response? Seeing none, please proceed.
Okay. Senator Hoffman, I think Senator Kaufman had a question. Okay. Sorry.
Senator Kaufman, thanks. I didn't see you. I apologize.
All right. Thank you. I just wanted to mention that I had a conversation with the mayor of the Anchorage municipality, and she described, yes, the ongoing interface and that it appears to be a helpful initiative. So I just want to say thank you for that.
Thank you,
Senator Kaufman. Ms. Sanders.
Thank you. Okay. And then moving forward to question number three, there were inquiries by the committee specific to vacancy factor and what percentage. There is an attached document that is quite extensive and detailed on every single vacancy factor for every single appropriation and allocation within the budget. At a very broad level, the overall vacancy that we're experiencing in the state is about 15%. This is a very detailed approach, but happy to provide more information if there are questions associated with vacancy in the state and how we are handling vacancies.
Yes, there is a question by Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think on the last page here, we've got the Marine Highway, and some of them are just non-available. And not for today, but when we do the subcommittee, could you maybe have those blanks tried to fill in so we can talk about the staffing level?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, yes, we can ask the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities to be prepared. One of the nuances that we have in the way that we budget is that the Marine Highway System is not a part of our personal services module, so to speak, and so they track it separately and can provide that information to you, Senator.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. Senator Kaufman.
Thank you. One of the conversations we've had here at the table, I was wondering if we have like a 10-year projection on payroll in terms of, number of people and what they'll get paid, and whether or not with incoming developments in AI, workflow being automated, information tasks becoming more and more in the realm of what a a computer would do rather than what individuals sitting at a desk would do. If we're adequately forecasting what our workforce will look like in the state to do basically information or mental tasks that may very soon be rolled up into just computing processing power, and if not enhancing the productivity of the people, perhaps even displacing some of those people. And what those trends might look like, I think that's important for some of the things that we're considering at the table with respect to things that are driven by workforce and are the population of state workers.
Ms. Sanders.
Thank you, Senator Kaufman, through the chair. I listened to the remarks of the committee yesterday during the presentation by Commissioner Vrana and Director DeVries on the salary study, so I'm aware of your comment. At this point, I would need to talk to the Department of Labor and Workforce Development to see if their team is doing any forecasting related to state staffing or growth or decreases associated with AI and implementation of various systems. As far as salaries go associated with state employees, our contractual bargaining unit agreements are on a three-year basis. So anything beyond roughly a 3 to 5 year time frame is going to be, I think, more guessing. Completely agree with you on the remarks associated with AI and implementation, and we are asking state agencies to look for ways that they can automate the work that they do and use tools to increase production and reduce the manual paper pushing that we are doing, whether that's in payroll or in Bureau of Vital Statistics and processing documents, motor vehicles, right? So we are in agreement that there are opportunities for us to increase our work product, timeliness of processing, and how we do work. What is unclear to me that I don't know if it can be predicted or not is what the workforce will look like. Often what I hear in my engagement with state agencies is there isn't enough staff to do all of the things, and even if we automate something, does that mean a position goes away, or does it mean a person is doing something different now? And what does that different look like? And I can't speak to that. But we can definitely look into talking with the Department of Labor and seeing what they have maybe for some forecasting.
Senator Kaufman.
Thank you. Yeah, just I think it's relevant as we look at open positions. And so if you were to do a heat map on those open positions that, hey, these are likely to be pulled into efficiency. Mm-hmm. But then there's positions that are they're just not going to be done by any kind of AI or programming. It's not really – might be slightly enhanced by that, but it won't be replaced by that. And I call it kind of the boots-on-the-ground position. But so I think out of the open positions, there's a reality that could – a future reality that could be indicated by a heat map-type glance at it where, hey, this is likely to be – enhanced by AI, this is resilient to it. It's not, like the old joke about if you want a job tomorrow, learn to be a plumber today because that's going to be hard to replace. So I think we've got the equivalent of plumbers and then the equivalent of information workers, that type of thing that could impact greatly as this progresses. I did a five-year timeline forecast using AI, asking it literally, what changes do you see in the next 5 years? And the minimum changes that it described are going to be very impactful in the workforce.
Thank you, Senator Kaufman. I think that concludes item two. The last item on today's agenda is a response to the committee on DOT questions. I invite Pannone, Director of DOT, to the table.
Senator Hoffman, or Chair Hoffman, if I might, there were two other letters.
Okay.
Real quick, do you want me to walk through those?
Please, yes.
Okay, and do you mind helping me, Tony? Thank you. So there was a second letter that was dated for February 3rd, but it was for the presentation that I provided to the committee on vetoes on January 27th, 2026. The first question is pertaining to fiscal year 2025 lapsing appropriations. The Department of Administration provided an attachment to the letter showing where and which departments the appropriations that lapsed came from and how we got to the funding that was deposited. It was $24.7 million into the Group Health Group Life Fund at the end of the fiscal year, with no further funding going into the major maintenance, the CAT fund, or the rate smoothing appropriations that were outlined in the legislation. I will note there is a requirement in statute for the administration to submit a projection of lapse. That is due here soon, and we'll be sending that legislature to the legislature. It is very difficult to project where an agency may lapse, especially based on the earlier conversation that we're having about with reductions and vetoes. Agencies are very, very limited in their resources right now. But we will do our best to provide that projected lapse. The second question had to do with providing a 5-year and a 10-year average for the Disaster Relief Fund for this year and last year. In the presentation on page 2, we've provided examples of what the amounts should be, as well as backup documentation on what the average would look like as we're trying to figure out a methodology for projecting what amount is appropriate to appropriate into the fund for a base level. And item number 3 in the memo is a similar question specific to the fire suppression fund. And so at the bottom of the page, you have the 5-year and 10-year averages for both fiscal year 2025 and 2026 for the committee's reference.
And this was asked primarily because the administration submitted their requests on the 5-year average. Is that correct? For FY 26?
I don't have. Is Bob Ernest on the phone? If he could just.
We could check on that.
Okay. I want to say it was 5-year, but I'm second-guessing myself.
And the third letter?
Okay. And the third letter is the document dated February 12th. Question number one, this was questions that were pertaining to the fiscal year 2026 supplemental budget that was presented to the committee on February 4th. The first item is a overtime hours report from the Department of Corrections for the last 12 months. Accompanying the letter is a lengthy 25-page report by PCN for Department of Corrections. It was a date range of January 5th, 2025 through January 2nd, 2026 by correctional officers and other facilities staff and how much overtime was paid.
Senator Stedman?
Just a question. I know we've brought this up in the difficulty dealing with the growth in the Department of Corrections, and there's no interest in letting the convicts out of the jailhouse, but trying to get more budgetary control over that. I think we've had numerous conversations here, and I think the department and OMB and the legislature have been struggling with that, but these are significant. I mean, the sum of overtime hours for the number one position here is 2,774. There's about 2,000 hours in a work year. The number two position is 2,200, and I assume that they have an additional 2,000 hours in regular 52-week work year, 8 hours a day. And I would just like to point out, Mr. Chairman, it's when you look at the hours, there's lots of employees that have 1,000 plus hours. The 2,007 hours is, and 2,002 hours is only, 200 hours is only two people. The rest of them, the 1,000 hours plus, I think is something that we should take note of, Mr. Chairman, as we work through the department, how we're going to correct this budgetary situation. So, and I don't begrudge anybody picking up overtime hours. I think that's good. It helps with Christmas and making mortgage payments and living, but something's got to give somewhere along here.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. Please proceed.
Thank you.
I'm sure Senator Keel will figure this out for the committee. He's the subcommittee chairman. Oh, you're not?
No. But I'm happy to work on it.
Okay, thanks. Please proceed.
Thank you. So the second and final question was associated with timelines and solutions to returning families and people back to their communities after the West Coast storms. As I mentioned, we work very frequently with the Department of Military and Veteran Affairs, Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management, as well as the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, as they are the boots on the ground right now, making improvements and fixing what was destroyed in the disaster and providing cleanup. There isn't a specific date or a timeline that was provided in this response from the Department of Military and Veteran Affairs, but it provides some context to the, the critical things that they are facing as they go through the assessment, the cleanup, and the remediation, in ensuring that when families are returned to those communities that they have, access to clean water, sewer, they have fundamental key needs established before we are returning anyone. So I thought we had the Department of Military and Veteran Affairs on the phone to talk at more if there are questions regarding that timeline.
Again, I would like to put on the record thanking the administration for a quick response to my constituents in Western Alaska. This has been devastating to the people and all of the work this administration has brought forward in coordinating the efforts with numerous agencies is greatly appreciated.
Thank you. Chair Hoffman, I believe we have Director Don Pannone here to speak to the letter that they presented in response to the committee questions.
That's the third item on today's agenda. Mr. Pannone, please identify yourself and address the questions.
For the record, Don Pannone, Director of Program Management and Administration for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. The department provided a response to our committee meeting that took place on February 2nd. There were three follow-up questions, and the first was the toll credit balance and the application of those toll credits. We have roughly 2.3 million toll credits remaining right now, and the table on the letter provides an outline of the toll credits we've received. In 2024, we received 42 million of toll credits. In 2025, we received 23.9 million of toll credits. And we're working on another request for approximately 20 million plus of toll credits for the current year. And then the table outlines that we've used 32.2 million for the Testamina replacement vessel, 924,000 for the no low emission shuttle ferry, and then a number of vessel projects and terminal projects we've allocated the toll credits to and transferred those to the Federal Transit Administration as well. The second follow-up item was regarding the federal fiscal year 2023 rural ferry grant application timeline. The question was, at what time did we submit the application for those funds, and we had submitted them on the deadline of July 17th, 2023, and received the award roughly 135 days later. The last question we received was, what was the added value of the Rural Ferry grant funding? And we've provided below the operating grant awards. For 2023, we received $44.8 million. For 2024, the Marine Highway received $38.5 million. And 2025, we received $66 million. And we have the commensurate match from the ferry system in the table there as well.
Thank you, Director Pannone. Do members of the committee have any questions regarding his response to previous questions? Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just wondering if you had any updates for the committee. We're dealing with these toll credits, but any of the funds are jiggling loose in Washington? You have any good news for us?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, next week our legislative liaison, Andy Mills, and our commissioner, Ryan Anderson, will be meeting with a number of federal agency heads and as well as our congressional delegation members to continue to work on that, resolving that issue.
Senator Stedman.
Thank you. We look forward to hearing that. And I'm just a little thick-headed, Mr. Chairman, back to the previous question of, you know, looking at these hours of 2,200 for the second place person on Department of Corrections, 2,200 hours. A little over 2,000 hours in any given year. So they're working 16 hours a day, 5 days a week all year. That is pretty substantial workload. And there's multiple employees that are in that range of north of 1,500 hours. Maybe we could, Mr. Chairman, maybe we can ask for this to be sorted by the hours, the data set here. Maybe they come to the subcommittee and have them sort that table by hours. It just seems overworked. Like a lot of hours, double shift all year long. I mean, that's
through the chair, Senator Stedman. Yes, we can. I thought this was provided in Excel. If it was not, we'll make sure that the committee can have it. We can sort it a multitude of ways. You know, one thing I just want to remind the committee is that this particular union for correctional officers has rules in place within their bargaining unit agreement that provide for priority overtime shifts. So if you are a senior employee, you may have priority towards signing up for a shift. That limits the Department of Corrections ability to manage in a way that we would hope we could. I would also note, you know, that there are correctional officers that, while it may appear they're working overtime, they may have taken leave on their personal, their normally scheduled time frame. So, to your earlier comment about how many hours a person would have worked, those bargaining unit agreements really limit our ability to manage who may be signing up for overtime or who may not. I am not an expert on this union. I am sharing anecdotal information that the department has shared with me and expressed concern on why the numbers are as high as they are. But we're happy to provide a different sort or summary on the information that was provided.
Senator Stedman.
Yes, I think that would be good because I think if a person was to run 16 hours a day, 5 days a week, your family would run out the door with their hair on fire because you'd never be home. Or maybe they'd be happy you weren't home, I'm not sure, but maybe we can get a run on how many hours they actually worked. Because this is just listed as sum of overtime hours. And it'd be nice to see what regular hours, overtime hours for the subcommittee so we can, and I recognize there might be contractual arrangements, but we should at least know the results of the contractual arrangements in detail.
We can get that to the subcommittee. Chair Senator Keel, Senator Kaufman.
Thank you. I think it would be useful to have a years of service column as well, just so that we can get a better view of the workload on these folks. Thank you.
Get that to the subcommittee chair as well and to Senator Kaufman. Further questions of the department? Thank you, Ms. Lacey, for that presentation. That concludes the meeting today. Our next meeting is scheduled for Monday, February the 23rd at 9 a.m. There will be no meeting tomorrow. With that, we are adjourned.